up on this episode of DL Weekly, Max Pass updates, Carthay Circle expanding, an event celebrating 50 years of the Haunted Mansion.
The Avengers assemble at the resort, Aladdin makes a visit, we talk to his blue friend, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of April 10th, 2019. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to all of our supporters on Patreon, including Holly B for joining at the general admission level. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live shows, some DL Weekly swag, and more. If you'd like to learn more, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Have you booked your trip to the resort yet? If not, you should. Contact James and Mike over at Concierge and they will take care of your entire vacation from beginning to end. And as an added bonus, you will get a free year of touring plans. Why wait? Check them out at concierge.com.
Well, if you're going to go to the park soon and want to be wearing some DL Weekly swag, head on over to dlweekly.net/store to pick some up.
Now let's get to the news. Another perk has come to the already pretty awesome Max Pass service at the resort. You can now book Fast Pass seating for Fantasmic and World of Color without having to go to the Fast Pass distribution locations. This expansion to the service is available now.
What do you think about this? I was excited when I saw it.
So, I'm going to be real honest right now. I thought that you could do that already. So shame on me for not realizing that. But I thought everything that had Fast Passes you could access with Max Pass. So I guess I hadn't realized that they hadn't opened that up for the nighttime shows yet. But in my defense, when I was there, when I used it, World of Color was not working, and we had the dining package for Blue Bayou, so I didn't even look into getting a Fast Pass for either of those things. So that's my defense. It's not a very good defense, but that's my defense.
I have the same reasoning that you did. Last time I was there, we had the dining package for Fantasmic, and I think we did get a World of Color Fast Pass, but Max Pass wasn't there at the time.
Oh, sure.
So.
That's a better excuse than
I suppose.
Yeah, no, it was a little mind-boggling to me. I'm like, what? You couldn't do that already? But I'm glad that it is now an option.
We had kind of a role reversal because I saw the news story pop up today and I was like, oh, check this out. And you were like, they didn't do that already? Because usually yeah. You're the one that gets all excited about a story and I'm just kind of like, oh, okay. Well, in a move that seems to go against Project Stardust to open up the walkways around the resort in time for Galaxy's Edge, the Carthay Circle Lounge is expanding into the breezeway on the sidewalk on the Hollywoodland side of the restaurant. Low hedges will be installed to separate the seating area from the walkway. Like I said, this kind of goes against Project Stardust. It's actually putting something in a walkway, which I thought was interesting, but Project Stardust has been mostly relegated to Disneyland. But I don't know, like I've never really paid too much attention to the Carthay Circle restaurant because I thought it was pricey. The lounge we've done stories on before and I was excited to maybe go check out when we go. But I looked at some of the pictures that Mice Chat had up and I was like, this place looks pretty swanky. Although, again, I feel like it's going to be fairly pricey. So who knows?
Well, and looking at the pictures too, because I was trying to, I couldn't picture where they were talking about for where they were going to be putting this outdoor seating. Because it seemed to me like it was pretty tight over in that area, but there's a really nice shot online from Dusty Sage from Mice Chat that kind of gives you a very clear idea of, oh, that's where it's going to go. I really don't think it's going to have that big of an impact because me personally, this kind of, it's very gorgeous, this almost hallway that they have. It's more of an outdoor hallway. It's beautiful, and I bet you nobody ever goes down it. It's probably just unused space right now, whereas if they could put tables out there, then it would be a used space because it's basically a walkway that's right next to the building. There's a sidewalk right out in front of it, but then there's also the street right out in front of that. I feel like most people are walking down the street, maybe the sidewalk. I can't imagine anybody'd be right up against the building where this is going to be kind of converted.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of is maybe when a parade or something goes by, this might be a good walkway for people.
Oh yeah, you're probably
going behind
right.
the crowd.
Yep, that's probably
but
the area. Yep.
I'm sure Disney is fantastic at crowd control. I'm sure that they'll figure something out.
Of course. While not taking place at the resort itself, there is an interesting event that we wanted to make you aware of. A Swinging Wake special event celebrates 50 years of the Haunted Mansion. The event is hosted by fans and takes place at the Springfield Banquet Center in Fullerton, California on September 28th. Parking is free and tickets are $149 per person. A buffet dinner, special performances, a cosplay contest, and presentations from Imagineer Bob Gurr, animatronics expert Garner Holt, and more are included. Wow, I
was
going to
say
so bad.
Well,
it was very hard for me to read that without like squeeing in the middle of it.
The excitement for this was obviously you and our supporter Alex are very, very big mm-hmm. Haunted Mansion fans. And I sent this to him in our chat and I said, Alex, are you excited? It's his birthday. So I feel
like
he's going to go out there.
Extra excited for
it. I mean, even if you don't. Even if you're not like a huge Haunted Mansion fan, the opportunity to see a presentation from Bob Gurr
yeah.
or Garner Holt. Garner Holt did a lot of animatronics work with the Disney company, and his company does a lot of animatronics for the entertainment industry in general, and they kind of lead the way with that stuff. So it sounds very exciting, and I think just for the presentations, I feel like $149 is pretty decent.
Oh,
so
that's and the fact that you're getting a dinner, and you know, it's not just your ticket to get in the door.
Well, if anybody wants details or links to get tickets or something like that, we do have the link in our show notes, plus the address for the Banquet Center.
FYI, September 28th is a Saturday.
Nice. So it's even easier.
So perhaps we could take a long weekend.
You are obsessed with these long weekends. If we told you an attraction had flooding issues, what attraction comes to mind? Probably not the Storybook Land canal boats. Monday morning, one of the boats took on water with about 10 guests on board. The guests were transferred from the waterlogged boat to another boat where they were provided dry clothes and shoes. Nobody was injured during the incident.
I'm so glad that nobody was injured during this. And, you know, it's one of those things, we were chatting about this earlier today, you know, I would somehow want to see either video or see I can't really picture how exactly this happened, because it sounds like water actually came up over the sides of the boat and mm-hmm. that's kind of what happened. It's not like there was a hole in the bottom and it was leaking, so I'm trying to figure out what caused water to come up and over the boat.
The only thing I can think of is perhaps it was a balancing issue, because that's one of the attractions where when you come up to the dock, they say, okay, on three, everybody stand up at the same time.
Yeah.
It's all for balancing. So I'm wondering if somebody on the attraction adjusted poorly during a corner or something, and just all of that added together and water got in.
Who knows?
And I'm pretty sure it was an abundance of safety that they stopped the attraction and they, you know, evacuated people. That kind of thing. So, I mean, the water in there is only 2 to 3 feet deep. It's not like anybody was going to drown or anything, but abundance of caution, always a good idea.
You know, the thing that I thought was pretty cool, this is so ridiculous of me, but I thought it was so cool that they got, that Disney hooked them up with dry clothes and dry shoes. So these people have something very interesting, a very interesting story to tell. Plus now they've got some free Disneyland merch too out of it.
Not the way I'd want to get Disneyland merch,
no.
But still.
Well, the Avengers assembled last week at Disney California Adventure to celebrate a $5 million donation to benefit children's hospitals. The donation is part of Avengers Universe Unites, a charity event that is part of the company's Disney Team of Heroes. Stars in attendance included Robert Downey Jr., who plays Iron Man, Chris Hemsworth, who plays Thor, Scarlett Johansson, who plays Black Widow, Jeremy Renner, who plays Hawkeye, Paul Rudd, who plays Ant-Man, and Brie Larson, who plays Carol Danvers, better known as Captain Marvel.
I know there was a bunch of people in our chat that were super excited and wished that they were there. In fact, we had a couple of our supporters there, but they were in Disneyland, not uh-huh. California Adventure, when this was all going on. So that's pretty cool. I mean, it's neat when they have situations like this where, you know, some of the people that play your favorite characters are actually in the parks.
Well, and such big names that mm-hmm. came out for this. So it's
all together.
You know, it's just amazing. You know, the other thing that we were talking about, too, was just there just seems to be so many big name celebrities in the resorts recently, because it feels like it was just a couple weeks ago that Tim Burton yep. was there to promote Dumbo. So very cool to see this many celebrities making big appearances at the park.
Well, now I wonder, I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but I wonder if Will Smith is going to show up to promote Aladdin.
You never know.
To be a little clear with this story, too, so Disney donated $1 million in cash. Mm-hmm. The Lego Group, Hasbro, Funko, and Amazon donated $4 million in Avengers Endgame toys that will be sent to hundreds of children's hospitals throughout the country, as well as Give Kids the World, a nonprofit resort in Central Florida. So $5 million wasn't just from Disney, but they did $1 million of it in cash, and then the other companies donated toys and stuff. So I think that's good. It's a good, nice round kind of donation. So. Well, if you're going to be attending this year's Dapper Days or thinking about it in the future, Mice Chat has posted some outfit ideas to inspire you. Some of the inspiration comes as Spring Day Picnic, so kind of a dress that kind of is reminiscent of a Spring Day Picnic, like a, you know, the checkered thing like a picnic.
Kind of like the picnic blanket. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Indiana Jones, the Haunted Mansion, Dumbo, and more. I figured that you would be all about this because there are some interesting ways. The cool thing about this article is they post pictures of all the different pieces you'd have to put together to make one particular outfit, which is kind of cool because you see a lot of pictures of people mm-hmm. at Dapper Days in their full outfit, but you don't really see all the details and stuff that go with it. So each of these has, you know, like earrings or a purse, shoes, you know, a dress or some type of outfit for it. So I think it's kind
of
neat.
The thing that's neat about all of these styles is it's in the details. So for example, there is the Haunted Mansion one. It's just a plain black dress with a black kind of hat, but the earrings are purple, so they're very and like kind of jeweled, so very reminiscent of the wallpaper is what mm-hmm. makes me think of for that. But the purse is bat-shaped, so mm-hmm. they're very subtle nods to these things, which I think makes them that much more interesting. It's not screaming Haunted Mansion. It's a very subtle nod. So you could walk past somebody wearing this outfit and not even know that that's what they were portraying. So it's like Dapper Days meets Disney bounding.
So what do you think? Are you going to try to Disney bound or something at some point when one of the times you go to the park?
Perhaps. I have to like concentrate in my focus, but yes, that might be a thing. I should start looking now for pieces yeah. so that I can have something together.
You know, we should do that. For one of the days we're in the parks in August, or maybe even one of the D23 days, we should have a day where we Disney bound.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Honest Abe will have to wait just a little bit longer to return after Dumbo moves out of the Opera House on Main Street and Aladdin moves in. Beginning April 19th, a special preview of the new Aladdin movie will be presented in the theater.
So
I have mixed feelings on
me
this.
Me too. I said in our chat earlier that I wish that this would be put in the theater that's in Tomorrowland, because right now it's just doing, you know, Path of the Force or whatever. And, of course, the Sunset Showcase Theater over in California Adventure is being yep. reworked to be mm-hmm. Mickey's PhilharMagic. So, you know,
I don't know, you know. And
but you made a good point.
Yeah, we were talking about this because we're very sad that poor Abe Lincoln is kind of getting, I feel like he's getting a little ignored, but maybe there's stuff going on behind the scenes and maybe he's getting some TLC mm-hmm. that they're not really talking about. But I just feel like the space made perfect sense, especially for Dumbo, because it's very, very, like, very theater-like in there. It's mm-hmm. not just a screen like you go into a movie theater. It's sure. like theater as in, like,
like a performance space. Arts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it made total sense for Dumbo because Dumbo is very circusy. Circusy is very like spectacle like.
Yeah.
So the big flowy curtains and all the whole thing made sense. The other thing though is we need to remember for Mary Poppins they did this too. They brought in all of the different pieces of the movie, whether it was
costumes or props.
We had Dumbo himself was that, well, a figure
artwork.
Of Dumbo,
artwork.
Different artwork, that sort of stuff. I don't know where you would put that in like the Tomorrowland theater area
yeah.
because they don't really have a nice indoor space
no.
that they
there's
could
a covered outdoor,
those
but you don't want to have some costumes from a movie outdoors
no,
with
yeah.
the elements.
Well, and the other thing is location too, right? This is right as you walk into the
yeah.
park. So it kind of draws you in because it's one of the first things that you see. So they probably get a lot more traffic going in to, you know, look at this stuff and experience it. I am really excited to see what they come in with for Aladdin, what kind of movie props and pieces we're going to be seeing. I'm hoping, and I have my fingers crossed, but I think I have a feeling that the lamp is going to make its appearance. Oh, yeah.
That
sure.
just seems like a no-brainer. It does say on the Disney Parks blog that it is for a limited time, so hopefully this will just stay for a little bit until the movie opens, and then we'll get Abe back.
Yeah.
Because we had some people that have visited recently that have let us know that they were disappointed because they wanted to go see Abe. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Dumbo was playing.
And he's a very iconic piece of the park. So it's very sad to see him not around for this long.
Yeah. Maybe this is how they trick people. Because last time they were talking about getting rid of Mr. Lincoln, people wrote all types of mail to the resort and everything and said, you can't take Abe. No, don't do it. Don't replace it. No, you can't possibly do it. And so they kept him. So I'm wondering if like they just start putting other things in and people just kind of forget. And then all of a sudden he's just not there anymore.
Oh, don't say that.
Well, no, I mean, I don't want that. But. Well, Bo Peep from Toy Story 4 will be making appearances in Pixar Pier this summer. There's no announced arrival date for her, but she'll definitely be around after the movie comes out this summer.
I'm very curious. So this information is coming from Disney, and the only thing that is with the article is a picture of Bo Peep from the upcoming Toy Story 4, and it's kind of her more, I don't even know how to describe her. She's a whole different Bo Peep in this movie, you guys. She does not have her pink dress on. She's got pants. She's got a cape, and she's primarily wearing blue. So I'm wondering what version of Bo Peep we will get to meet in the park. Will it be Bo Peep with her big pink dress, or is it going to be Bo Peep, this new style of Bo Peep with the blue pants?
I think it'll be the new style, just because that's what they put a picture of and to promote Toy Story 4. One of the things that we talked about on Mouse Kingdoms this week was that Bo Peep's going to be over in Hollywood Studios in Toy Story Land, and one of the things one of their meet and greets that they're going to have at the Contemporary, because they're going to have a Woody's Roundup thing, is Bullseye. And I was watching video of when Jessie's Critter Carousel opened last week or a couple weeks ago, and there was in the background, there was a Bullseye character, like a character walking around. Oh. I've never seen a Bullseye character before.
We'll probably be seeing a Bullseye.
All I know is you don't see him very often.
No, so maybe he's going to be making an appearance also at Pixar Pier. Who knows?
I don't know. I just think the more characters we don't see very often, the better.
Oh, that's so fun.
Because I like seeing things you don't see very often. You know, I'm still holding out. Villains, more villains.
When Galaxy's Edge opens next month, there will be a ton of choices to make on where you're going to shop for your new Star Wars merchandise. One of them will rely on whether you're a loyalist, sympathizer, or a scoundrel. If you're a loyalist, Resistance Supply is a place for you. It is set up in a forest to avoid detection from the First Order. If you're a sympathizer, then First Order Cargo is where you should head. This is located in Docking Bay 9 of the village. Finally, if you're a scoundrel, Black Spire Outfitters, the outdoor marketplace, will be where you go to shop.
I think this is really interesting. Disney released some photos or some new concept drawings of what these different areas are going to look like. And the one that looked really neat to me was the First Order Cargo, because it looks like what the shelves are going to be for the merchandise looks like. It's got like a turret on top of it. You know, it looks like an arms depot.
Very, very themed.
Yeah.
Very themed.
So I'm very excited for this. And they had some other pictures. They had a picture that we had kind of seen before of the Black Spire Outfitters, which is kind of in that outdoor marketplace. And then the Resistance Supply just kind of looks like a nice area where that's kind of hidden in the forest, that, you know, kind of like what you would expect the Resistance kind of base area and stuff to look like. So
now there's no rule that you're not allowed to enter all three of
these
shops.
Oh, no, of course not.
It just depends. They kind of themed each of these shops to the different groups. So please don't think that, well, I'm a loyalist, so why can't I go out to the outdoor marketplace Black Spire Outfitters? You know, but you can. You totally can. So
I think
don't
the
get
whole
that confused.
Idea that they're trying to create here is through the app and all these different experiences, like riding the Millennium Falcon attraction and whatnot, I think that they're trying to get you to pick a faction and then kind of like get into that character of like, well, you're not going to go support them.
Well,
or
and you know, I wonder if you're going to get, how do I want to say this? If you're going to get treated differently, depending on which store you decide to shop in, if that store is fitting for your character in the universe or not.
I'm kind of excited for
you
this.
Know, are you going to get kind of poked fun at if you walk into a loyalist store when you're a scoundrel, or, you know, however it goes.
I'm really interested to see how the cast members interact with different guests and know that you're a loyalist or I'm a scoundrel.
It's mind-boggling to me. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The technology that's behind this is just incredible. I can't wait to see how it all unfolds.
Well, then the real question comes, what happens when the technology stops working? From somebody who loves technology and has problems with it frequently, I'm just saying. Well, April is Earth Month, and the Disney resorts around the world are celebrating with a focus on renewable energy. At Disneyland specifically, the steam trains of the Disneyland Railroad and the Mark Twain run on fuel from used cooking oil from the resort restaurants, and other alternative fuel sources for the parade floats, monorails, and other attraction vehicles. The conservation is the equivalent of 4,000 cars being removed from roads each year.
Isn't that crazy? Just crazy. The other thing, too, and Tag and I are very sad about this, is they're not using as many fireworks as they used to use. So that's obviously cutting down on their carbon footprint as well, because I would assume that the projections are much more eco-friendly.
Oh, yeah.
Even though, obviously, it's running on electricity, but it's not putting up so much stuff into the air. So that's another thing. That one makes me a little sad, though.
Well, they've been working for years and years. If you've ever noticed, so if you go to, like, here in the Midwest, when we go to a fireworks show, there's a lot more smoke after our fireworks show than there is after a Disney fireworks show. That's because Disney has developed and patented compressed air launching tubes, so you don't launch with like that.
Oh, sure,
Then special fireworks formulations, so you don't end up having as much smoke come from each one.
Extra stuff in the air. The other thing, too, to mention is, obviously, the other moves that we've been talking about and reporting on is the new reusable bags that they have that are priced at very reasonable cost, in my opinion. And then they're switching over to less plastic with trying to get to paper straws in all of the resort. They haven't gotten there yet, but they're working towards it.
They've just been doing all these different things, and it's great. Well, I know out in Disney World that they've been installing a lot of solar panels and stuff to be able to get a lot of their resort stuff to be solar powered.
Well, the Disneyland wagon ban that we have talked about on the last couple of episodes has sparked a lot of comments from families online, especially families with either autistic special needs or kids with medical issues. They state that the wagons are a must for those that need a quiet space at the park to get away from the crowds. The resort has stated that exceptions will be made for those with a need. Just contact the guest relations prior to your visit. I feel bad about this because I think there's a lot of confusion, and I feel bad that these families are feeling a little alienated, like maybe Disney is not as welcoming to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad because I think there's a lot of miscommunication and maybe a lot of assumptions being made with this. I think in total, Disney's just trying to alleviate any unneeded wagons.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, kind of like how they have the special assistance pass. I'm sure if, you know, you go to them and you let them know what's going on, they're going to allow you to have bigger strollers or the wagons if it's necessary for you and for your family.
Yeah. I think the main issue here that Disney is trying to curtail is that there are a lot of families that do not need these and are bringing them just as a matter of convenience, not need. And so to weed out those who have a real need, like they did with the special assistance pass, you have to kind of, you know, be very strict with it. And of course, Disney is not going to, you know, tell you you can't bring your family. You know, if somebody needs, you know, a special stroller or a wagon or something, they're not going to tell you you can't use it. They just want to stop the casual visitor who doesn't have a special need for it from coming in and kind of ruining it for everybody else. So I think it's a good move. I think that people are very passionate about this, and I feel, you know, there are plenty of families that I've seen talk about this online that are afraid that their children and their families are not going to be able to go and enjoy a day at Disneyland anymore. And that's just, I just don't think it's the case. And I feel like Disneyland probably could have done a little bit better at communicating that, but
I think the best thing, too, is if you are one of these people that's concerned, you know, has a concern about this, I think just reach out to the park and just see if you can contact the park, contact guest relations, even if you're not planning a visit in the near future. Just contact them and kind of get a little bit more information to see, you know, what they will accommodate for, what they won't accommodate for, you know, and then what the steps are then to be able to use what you need to use in the parks.
Yeah, and come May 1st, I think it's going to be kind of a transitional period. I think that they're going to realize what people's actual situations are, and I think they're going to make accommodations for it and probably better publicize some of that stuff. But, you know, you can't plan for everything until you kind of do it. So, it'll work itself out. And if you're one of those families that is concerned about this, just give guest relations a call. Their phone number's all over their website. You can email them. I'm sure that they can put to rest any fears you may have about any of these needs you may have for your family. Well, now we take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James tries to stump us with Disney trivia. He'll read us a question, we'll attempt to answer it, and then James will give us the correct answers after discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, James?
Didn't somebody just sound so excited about his trivia skills and whatever this week?
I think he's ready for it.
We'll find out. We'll find out. Indeed. I just want a win, James. That's all I want. Just one week of trivia. I would just like Teresa and I to both get 4, and then we could feel better about ourselves.
Well, good news for you this week is I'm actually asking 5, so there's a chance you might get 4.
All right.
Yeah, better odds.
All right.
All right, so this week I'm going to start by returning the favor, since last week Teresa asked me 2 Haunted Mansion questions. I figure I'll see if I can stump her with 1. So what stands where the Hatbox Ghost was going to stand?
Can I give you what's there during Haunted Mansion holiday?
No.
Because I know what's there during Haunted Mansion holiday. You're looking for a specific thing?
Thing?
There's a thing.
I'm sorry,
There's
Tay.
A thing that is there.
It's the hat.
So what I want to say is, and we'll have to check this, because I feel like I know where it was. I just don't know what's there now. So as you're leaving the attic, on the left side is the bride. I want to say he was supposed to be on the other side of the track, where normally the big snake thing that eats the gifts is during Haunted Mansion holiday. But I don't know what's there normally, because I'm always looking at the bride, because I like her picking up her axe.
But I don't think that he'd be there, because your focus is supposed to be on the bride.
But the bride wasn't there.
There was always a bride there.
Yeah. Well, what's your answer?
I'm still going to go with a hat is where the hat box ghost was supposed to be placed.
Oh, jeez.
I think
so. What should I even write for my answer? Just like across from the bride? I mean, you're not going to give it to me.
I'm not giving you that at all.
He wanted a thing. You said a place.
Well, whatever.
All right, question.
Then I guess I'm going to get that one wrong.
Okay, you still have 4 more.
4 more to get there.
That was your 1.
And you might have to blame the listeners for the next 2. This one comes from Dylan H. And Dylan asks, on the Monsters, Inc., Mike and Sully to the Rescue ride, there's a sign in the locker room saying how many days there have been without an accident. Aww. How many days has it been since the last accident? If you want a hint, it's likely the same as it is in the movie.
Oh, jeez. It's been so long since I've seen Monsters, Inc.
How many days since there's been an accident?
And that's the hint. You don't have
how
a better
close
hint.
Do we have to be?
Yeah.
I'll give you a week. You're going to have within 7 days.
Within 7 days.
I'll say 13, because that sounds
right. I was going to only say 5.
Okay.
Because they had the sock.
2319.
Mm-hmm. 2319.
All right, sock good one, Dylan. Very recent, or very close to when Boo came through.
Yeah.
All right, question number 3 comes from Daniel. Daniel wants to know, which attraction in the park did Walt and his wife celebrate their 30th wedding anniversary prior to the park opening?
Oh, I know this one.
What attraction? Like, what were they on? What attraction did they celebrate there?
Yep.
I'm going to say the Mark Twain.
You didn't just read that off of me writing it down, did you?
No. No, I was thinking about the petrified tree.
I
thought it was near the Mark Twain.
I'm going to concur. They had their anniversary party in the Golden Horseshoe, and then they went out onto the Mark Twain.
All right. Question number 4. We're going to try something a little bit different. We're going to play a game of Where Am I in the Park?
Oh, okay.
I'm going to give you a place that I'm starting at as I wander aimlessly, and you have to tell me where I end up at. So, I guess Galaxy's Edge isn't open yet, so I turn around and head way south, passing Big Thunder on my left. I continue south along the river, but turn left instead of following the river. Continue forward, then take my first left, and I follow the path until my stomach tells me it's time to stop.
You're at a churro cart.
No, I think he's at the place that we can't ever remember the name of with the bread bowls.
So you go past Big Thunder.
Yep,
and you follow the river.
On the left. I continue south along the river, but I turn left instead of following the river at the bend.
Yep.
I continue forward, take my first left, and I follow the path until my stomach tells me it's time to stop.
But see, here's the thing. I can't, well, until the bend, huh? I'm trying to interpret where you think the bend is, because it kind of is a gradual thing. So I'm trying to figure out, do you turn in Frontierland, or are you turning more in Adventureland, or are you turning more towards...
Let me pull up my map to double check.
Can I look up what the bread bowl place is called?
It's the Royal Street Veranda, isn't it?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I turned in Adventureland, for the record.
Yes. Yes, it is the Royal Street Veranda.
I'm not going inside of buildings. I'm staying on the path.
You're getting beignets.
No, he's getting... you're saying beignet?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to spell beignet. You're getting Bengal barbecue. So you have a fifth question
this
week?
Yeah, I'm bringing out a bonus question this week. In honor of Ghost Host launching the Mouse Kingdoms podcast, I thought I'd offer a bonus question.
Okay.
About the Magic Kingdom and Disney World.
This is from you?
Yes.
Okay.
So as of a February 2019 article I found, how many Disney World Resort rooms are there?
Oh, rooms?
Gosh. Yep.
Oh.
For comparison, there's about 900 in Disneyland.
Well, there's a lot more than that at Disney World.
I'll give you a range of about 2,000.
2,000?
Oof.
I was going to say 20,000.
I'm going to say... So it's three at Disneyland. There's three resort hotels, and that equals. You said how many? 900.
About 900. Or 900.
If they're all the same
size. It's 990. Excuse me.
Okay, so we'll say about 1,000, and then in Disney World, there's like, I want to say there's like 20 something. We'll say 25 resorts. We're gonna say 17,000. What did you say, Teresa?
20.
20,000.
Did Tay get his magical four questions right?
Probably not.
No. Find out how well he actually did after the discussion topic.
All right. Well, our guest this week is one that I'm sure a lot of our listeners will know of in some capacity.
Oh, yes.
We have Dylan, who was actually the longest running genie in Aladdin, A Musical Spectaculars, working there for 10 years, 3 months, and somewhere between 5,500 and 6,000 shows. Welcome, Dylan.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for being on the show.
So, Dylan, we're going to start with some of our questions that we ask each of our guests. And so thank you again for taking some time to talk with us today.
I'm happy to do it. I hope I get the answers right.
I'm rooting for you. So I hope so, too. So what is your Disney story? So basically, kind of what's your background with Disney?
I grew up in Southern California, and my parents would take us to Disneyland, you know, probably about once a year. We'd have our annual Disneyland trip. Mm-hmm. So I grew up going to Disneyland and loving it and continue to do so, you know, of course, as an adult. We'd always, you know, Disneyland was always an option of a place to go that was always fun. And then the opportunity came for me to audition for a show at Disneyland, which I did, and I did not get.
Really?
Really. But... as Disney does, they keep your information on file. So sure. something came up that they actually thought I would be a fit for, called me up, invited me to an audition, and got hired from there.
Wow, that's
so
really exciting.
Interesting. So if you don't mind me asking, what was the first thing that you had auditioned for?
It was when California Adventure had first opened and they were doing the live version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Okay.
Oh.
I auditioned to be the host.
Interesting.
Well, that would have been a little different experience.
That would have been a very different experience.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a little biased, but I'm glad you got the second role.
Yeah, I know it. I am too.
Are you okay?
Too.
Good.
But actually, the genie's not where I started.
Really?
Really. I kind of did some other stuff in the park first before I actually went over to the genie. I actually got hired into special events. Mm-hmm. So I would do special events. And from there, they had an opening over at Aladdin's Oasis. in Adventureland when that was in existence. And so I was the storyteller at Aladdin's Oasis for about a year and a half-ish, I think. That show went down for refurbishment, and I wasn't sure I was going to come back. And then they had auditions for Aladdin, and I went to that and hired into Aladdin. However, I'll say this, too. That was my second audition for Aladdin. I actually auditioned for Aladdin one time before and did not get hired in.
Wow.
So it was my second audition to Aladdin where I got hired in.
So for those listening, perseverance is a good thing.
Exactly.
Just you got to keep going, and you may end up getting what you want in the end. You just have to wait for the right time, I guess.
It is true.
So Aladdin's kind of been your thing with Disney, because you did the...
I went from Oasis to the musical, yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like the genie is a storyteller in some way, too, so that translates over pretty well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you go to the parks for the first time, like on a trip, because you don't live in California anymore. You're not working at the parks anymore. Is that correct?
No. Okay. Well, I am still a cast member, actually.
Oh, you are?
Yes,
so do you,
I am.
On call, just in case they decide to bring Aladdin back?
That would be amazing, and I would do it in a heartbeat.
we've got our fingers crossed over here.
I actually still will, on occasion, host special events at Disney.
Oh,
I was just
fun.
Out there in February. This was my 13th year hosting Minnie's Moonlit Madness, a private charity event that they put on.
Oh, that's
very cool. Very
cool.
So you're like a cast member on call. I like
that.
Yeah.
That's neat.
So I feel very lucky that they've, been willing to keep me on the rolls, even though I'm halfway across the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you go to Disneyland now, if you're there for a non-official capacity, like to visit, let's say, and you go to Disneyland, where do you go when you first go in the park on your first day? Do you go, do you go left towards Adventureland, straight through to Fantasyland? Do you go towards Frontierland? Do you go towards Tomorrowland? Where do you go?
Tomorrowland. Every time. And I always have since I was a kid, because I love Space Mountain and I love Star Tours. It's a lot of fun. So if I can hit those two rides, or at least get my fast passes for those rides to ride later in the day, those are amongst my top priorities.
I feel like that's a really smart way to attack the park, because most people, Tag and myself included, I feel seem to go towards Adventureland. Mm-hmm. So you're going the road less traveled.
Seems that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll do that if I go to Disneyland first. If whoever I'm with wants to go to California Adventure first, we pretty much try to hit our fast passes for Radiator Springs first.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Yep. You kind of have to.
And then once you do that, you go over to Soarin' Around the World.
Now, this is totally random.
Sure.
Totally random. But speaking of Radiator Springs, did you ever meet the guy that's been on it like 10,000 times or whatever?
The guy that's been on it 10,000 times?
Yeah, there's a gentleman who, like, he goes and he has like the Guinness World Record for the amount of times riding Radiator Springs racers.
Wow.
And every time he goes, he has like a card, and he writes how many times, he updates it or whatever, and takes pictures with the cast members. And they actually just had on YouTube, if you go to the Oh My Disney channel, they had a kind of a documentary series called Disney People, and he was one of the people, and they kind of told the story of how I don't remember exactly what it was, but he had something happen in his life, and he decided that this was, got a motivation to get out of the house and get out and meet people and talk to people and do something, and he just loved the attraction, and so he's been on it over 10,000 times.
Wow. No, I haven't met him. I met there's a gentleman who I think holds the record for the number of consecutive days visiting the park.
Ooh.
And I met him, and then he did something too where, and I think it was this same person who was out in Orlando and did Orlando in the morning, just went into the park, just so he could say he was in the park, and then left, got on a plane, flew out to California, drove straight to Disneyland, and then went into Disneyland so he could do both parks in one day.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think I remember seeing something about that too. There's some people, if you look around the internet, there's some crazy fans out there.
Dedication.
That's
what that is.
Well, even better, there was somebody I saw online, and they made what you're saying, Dylan, is they made it a goal that they didn't want to just walk in the gates. What they did was they went to all four theme parks at Disney World and went on one attraction and then flew across to Disneyland and went on one attraction in each California Disneyland.
Yeah, so they did an attraction per six parks.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That is timing, planning, and luck. I mean,
yeah.
You risk, a line or a ride breaking down or
a delay on a flight.
A delay on a flight, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sure you travel enough, you know how flights and all that can get delayed. So what is your favorite attraction at Disney?
I've got to pick a top one. I can give you some of my favorites.
That works.
That's fine.
Yeah. Obviously I said when I go to Disneyland, I would go to Space Mountain first. But Space Mountain, Star Tours, of course, in Tomorrowland. Then I have to go. I would honestly have to go Haunted Mansion.
Yes,
Teresa loves Haunted Mansion. Good choice. I like Haunted Mansion too, but Teresa's like a next level.
Yes, I love it.
If you're gonna say like lifelong favorite attraction, I would have to say Haunted Mansion. Ever since I was a little kid, because there was a time when I was like too scared to go on roller coasters, so I wouldn't go on.
Oh sure.
On Thunder Mountain or Space Mountain, but Haunted Mansion every time. And then when they do the redress for it for Nightmare.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. It's amazing.
Yes.
It is amazing.
It's incredible to me that it's not just, like let's put some lights. It's Disney. You don't just sprinkle little lights and call it good.
Yeah.
The fact that there's specific animatronics that are dedicated just for the holiday version is just unreal.
It's amazing.
So glad they do it. The only thing I'm sad about is it seems like it could go a little less because I feel like it cuts into the end of summer, the last couple weeks of August, it goes down for the changeover. And I feel like, that's what's going to make us sad. We're going for D23 in August and I think it's going to be closed.
Yes, we're going to be there when it's in transition period.
Yeah, so
it's very popular both ways. So I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I wish they could snap their fingers and it would change overnight.
It it's like a 2 week makeover it takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's amazing is when they take it all down, it's like quicker than when they put it up. But it's like, I don't know. Even in a couple weeks, the amount of change that goes through that is just amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So being with Aladdin the Musical Spectacular, we actually haven't talked. I don't think we've actually talked about this show a terrible amount on this show.
Just how much we loved it and how much we miss it.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about that. But I think that a lot of people really had a soft spot kind of in their heart for the show. I know I did. It was definitely something that was on my must-do every time I went to California Adventure. And I tried to see it, unlike most shows, I tried to see it at least twice every visit I had because it was always different. One of the cool aspects of the show was that, your role as the genie, mm-hmm. you could change it. There was jokes and stuff that were different each time. So did it kind of start that way? Like, is that, I know you didn't start with the show, but I'm sure you know some of the history of the show. Is that kind of how Disney envisioned it, was so it could be constantly changing?
From what I understand, that was, the ideas that they wanted to be able to, update it and whatever and keep it fresh because you needed those pop culture references just to kind of like do homage to the way, Robin played it in the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, from what I understand, and so I don't know this for sure, but from what I understand, it was a bit more structured at the beginning.
Okay.
And it got to be a little bit looser as the show went on. They gave us a bit more room to play in different places and that sort of thing.
Sure. Sure.
Well, it's kind of like, in a way, it's kind of like the Jungle Cruise, mm-hmm. like every time you go out on a Jungle Cruise, you get some different jokes. And my understanding is there's a book that has a bunch of the jokes that they can do. But I'm sure there are skippers that, off the cuff sometimes.
Yeah, there's no genie joke book.
I feel like it would go out of date so quick.
And you know what? Now that you mention it, I feel like there should have been. Like, we should have just logged all the different jokes we did and when.
Yeah. That would be so interesting. It'd be a very large
book.
Now
I'm kicking myself for not thinking of that 10 years
Well,
ago.
YouTube, I'm sure there's a couple of different shows.
Oh, sure.
At least on YouTube that you can go back.
Tons of videos. But I don't want to be the one to sit there. I don't want to be the one to sit there and compile them. So if
I'm
so inclined.
I don't blame me at all.
I'll be happy to write the foreword or something like that.
There you go. We actually just watched the final performance on YouTube a couple weeks ago because we were missing the show so much. So with the kind of openness that you had with the show, off the top of your head, because when I was watching, I was actually trying to figure out, but how many times were you allowed to kind of do your own thing and just kind of go with the flow and then kind of go back into the traditional Aladdin story?
It's not like I can give you a definitive number of times that we can do it. There are places in the show where it'll either lend itself, to the jokes. Of course, like the genie's entrance, you can throw stuff in there. But really, kind of like the guiding principle was, as long as it didn't interfere with the storytelling or character.
Okay. So you could do it the whole show, or you could only do it like three times if you...
Well, no, I mean, again, it's there wasn't like really a number. So, I mean, like there are certain scenes, like when, like say when like Aladdin, you know, says, I'm sorry, Genie, I can't give you, you know, your final wish or whatever. A joke will find its way in there eventually. But I mean, like scenes like that kind of like have to play their moment. That's a significant part of the show. It's a significant moment for each of those characters. It's you never wanted to detract from the actual storytelling for the sake of a joke.
Gotcha.
Right. The story comes first.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm just impressed with your actors that you worked with. I don't know how they kept straight faces.
Oh, yes.
They didn't always. They honestly did not always do it.
Well, that'd be so hard because, since it was constantly changing, I'm sure you weren't able to always, like, prep them and say, so this is what I'm going to say. Don't react on stage.
Oh, that never happened. We never... Yeah. It was always pretty much, I mean, you get into, you know, a pattern where like you do the show enough and they know like where you're probably going to put in a joke or something like that. But if the joke changes up or something, or if just something happens and you run with it, you know, that's not something that they're prepared for. Sometimes it's not even something you're prepared for.
So obviously you have like a history and your background with comedy. So how long were you doing comedy before you started with Disney?
Well, let's see. I mean, I've been an actor pretty much my entire life. I grew up doing it and doing, you know, of course, the shows at school. And then I was doing, you know, all the community theater. And then I started branching out and doing a little bit more professional theater. I started doing comedy. I was like doing actual stand-up comedy when I was 18 and dabbled in it for a while through college. Left the scene for a while, came back, started doing comedy for a couple years and was playing around L.A. And then my wife got pregnant. And I did not want to be on the road with a new baby at home. So I left the comedy scene for a while. And it was really only a couple years, about three. It was shortly after our second child was born that I actually started working at Disney. Yeah, I was out of the scene for a little while. I dabbled back in it a little bit. And I'm actually back in it again now. So it's something I keep going back to. So I've been in and out of it for like, well, since I was 18, I'm not going to tell you. How's that?
A couple years. Got it. A couple years.
A couple years. I've been doing it
well,
for a couple
18
years.
Plus 10. So there.
Well, I mean, you were trapped in the lamp for 10,000 years. So,
10,000
I mean,
years. So yeah, any number I give you now will seem, you know, tiny.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, I cannot imagine. I've seen, obviously, I've seen a lot of comedians on TV and everything, and I've been to a couple comedy shows, and obviously, you know. People think being a comedian is easy, but it's definitely not. Because
no, it's not.
You could have the same joke totally land with one audience and bomb with another audience.
Well, that was totally true as the Genie as well.
I just remember people were always laughing in there. I mean, there were times, I guess, that were not as good. But I felt like the stuff that hit the best was definitely the contemporary stuff, the stuff that had to do with like current times. Do you have a moment that kind of stands out above all the others of your time on the show?
Just one? No. Again, I mean, with a little over 10 years on that stage, I mean, there are so many moments. I remember early on, because you'd mentioned, you know, how hard was it for some of the actors to keep a straight face. We were, this was within my first couple of years doing the show. We were sitting backstage between shows, probably lunch, I think. And we were watching the 40-year-old virgin in the break room.
That's not something you'd hear at a Disney park.
Right. And it was that back and forth between Seth Rogen and Paul Rudd, the you know how I know you're gay kind of thing. You know that whole exchange. And a lot of that was improvised. And I thought, oh, that would be so funny if I could just go up there and like, I was turned to the guy who was playing Jafar. It'd be so funny if I could go up there. But you know how I know you're evil kind of thing. And he just gave me this look it wasn't like I dare you. It was just like, it was like I challenge you. Like, let's see what you do. I'm like, oh man, well now I've gotta. So I can't even remember a lot of the jokes I came up with, but I literally did it that day. He'd like challenged me. So I went back to my, you know, dressing station, and I sat there and started like writing things and whatever. And so we went up on stage for the next show, and there's that moment where, you know, we have that time between Genie and Jafar when, you know, I'm granting his wishes, and we have that, you know, couple minutes where we riff with him. I did like my couple standards. You know, you pretty much always started with, you know, Poof, you're the Sultan. And if your last name were Pepper Shaker, you'd be Sultan Pepper Shaker.
Thank you for saying that. I say that joke all the time and nobody thinks it's funny, but I thought it was hilarious in that show. But Teresa thinks I'm nuts. Producer James thinks I'm nuts because I use that joke because that's the one I always remember. And they're like, that is stupid.
It's a terribly stupid joke. It's a horribly stupid joke, but it's funny.
Yeah.
But it's in the way you sell it, too. So, I mean, right. That was kind of like the standard. So I kind of like, you know, I'm giving him that one. And I gave him like another one that I always did at the time. I can't remember what that was. So I did like the first two were things he was always expecting. And I don't remember how I did it. And I wish it was on YouTube or something somewhere that I could find. But I basically turned and said, man, you are evil. You know how I know you're evil? And he turned and looked at me like, you are not going to do this. And I just started hitting him with one after another until and he was starting to, you know, you could see him starting to break. And of course, the audience was loving that. And that energy is kind of like fed off each other. And I hit him with one. And I don't know why this one stands. I don't know if this is the one that did it, but this one stands out. I said, you know how I know you're evil? You think Ursula from The Little Mermaid is hot. And I don't know if that was the one that did it, but he doubled over and was holding on to that big snake staff of his, just shaking laughing.
Wow.
So things like that were fun. You're just asking me moments that stick out. I'm like, that's my earliest memory of something just like really sticking out.
I wish I would have been there for that because that sounds amazing.
And you mentioned you were just watching the last show on YouTube. Yeah. I mean, that whole show, I mean, especially, and again, in that moment, that riff, you know, moment with Jafar was all stuff I'd never done before. That was all for the last show.
It was great.
It was all completely new. Doing the call outs to all the different Jafars, Aladdins, and genies was something.
Was neat. That was
really I was
neat.
Impressed that, like, I mean, you obviously worked with these people, but like the fact that you could go up there and just recall all of them on stage one after another, I was so impressed. I was like, wow, that's a class act to get up there and call out these people. And for me, like, I'll be honest with you, I didn't know the names of any of the actors in the show, but like, I knew what you were doing. And so it was.
And there were some like cool super fans who did. They knew a lot of those names. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you could tell the audience went wild.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And that, I mean, that didn't come out of nowhere. But I honestly wrote that whole thing 3 days before closing.
Wow.
Because we went down for a refurbishment once. And the show was down for about 2 months. And I did the last show before the refurbishment. And I did like this whole big thing there in the Jafar scene. And everybody thought it was great. And it's like, okay, well, what's Dylan going to do this time? It's like, well, I can't do the same thing. And it was killing me. And it was seriously like 3 days before the last performance. And I had the idea of what to do. I wrote the whole, you know, you're a Disney villain thing and came up with the idea of, you know, just giving that nod to the people who've played the roles over the years. And I reached out to the cast and people have just like, okay, just list everybody who's ever played the role. I went to stage management, everything like that, until I got a list of names. And my wife will tell you, anytime we drove anywhere, I'm sitting there reciting the list of names.
Oh, geez.
Just so I could do it. That performance. So there's a good chunk in the show where I'm not on stage, where Aladdin and Jasmine have, you know, they sing Whole New World together. Well, Jasmine sings her To Be Free song, and then Aladdin and Jasmine have Whole New World. So I have like a bit of a breather during that time as the genie, and I'm getting my makeup touched up and that sort of thing. So I was going to take that moment to go over that whole bit just one more time in my head. Well, if you watch that final performance, you'll notice in my opening scene when I come out of the lamp whenever, my mic is having problems and you hear it cut out at one point. And then my other mic cuts out because we're wearing two. And my spare started to go. And somehow they managed to get my spare working until that moment when I was off stage. So instead of being able to go over all those names and everything and, you know, review that whole thing in my head just one more time, I mean, I had to change out of my costume because that's a full bodysuit thing. I had to change out of that. They had to swap out the microphones. They had to do this whole thing. And by the time they got me zipped back in, it was time for me to walk back out on stage again. I'm like, I just made it.
Well, and if you think about that, I mean, that kind of threw your game off probably with the mics not working, and you're thinking about trying to get back out there in time, so you're probably not even thinking about the names at all.
Exactly, and it actually, I actually am glad it worked out that way, because it forced me in that moment to be really present in that moment and not rely on, okay, I just rehearsed this, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I didn't get a chance to do it, so I got to really be here and think about what I'm doing. So in that respect, I actually think that worked out to my benefit.
Did you, after that, did you hear from any of those former actors on the show?
I did. I got Facebook messages. People found my phone number and called me and thanked me for, and a couple of them are people who were in the show and left before I even showed up in the show. And they were just like, man, thank you so much for giving me that nod. How awesome. Blah, blah, blah. So that was really neat. Just have people call up and just say what a nice little tribute that was.
I thought it was great. I mean, it's very touching, especially for something like we've said a couple times already, something that was so close to the audience's heart. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's going to be pretty close to the actor's heart as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, that show was unique in that respect. And not just for me, most, if not all, I think the people who've been involved in that show will tell you the same thing. That it doesn't matter how little or how long you spent in that show, we were definitely a family. It was very much a family show. I mean, it was very, you get close to lots of people you do shows with, but there's something, I don't know, extra special about that show. And I honestly can't say what it was, but
it was the genie's magic, and not you. I'm just saying the magic of the show.
The magic of the genie.
It was Disney magic.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. So now I'm curious, now that I know that you were wearing a full bodysuit for your performances, how long did it take for you to get into makeup for these performances?
The makeup process took about anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour to get into the makeup and about 20 to 30 minutes to have it removed.
What did that entail, I guess? Because I could never tell, being in the audience, kind of, you know, what was part of a costume that you wore, what was actually painted on you.
Yeah, so it was very well done.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, and I don't want to spoil it. show's over, I can tell you.
So the blue wasn't your real skin color?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in makeup now. Actually, my wife likes to joke that I've worn more makeup in the time I was doing that show than she will have ever worn in her entire life.
Oh, I believe it.
And it's probably true. So it was a bodysuit with a fat suit that, you know, went all the way, you know, up to my neck and, you know, with the long sleeves, and we had gloves. So the makeup was a bald piece that, you know, went down the back of my neck, you know, from my forehead down to the back of my neck, a nose and forehead piece that went over that and stopped around the top of my head. There was a chin piece and the pointy ears, of course. And then all of that got painted and shaded and highlighted and glued. And
wow.
And of course, you know, we didn't do it ourselves. We had makeup artists who did it for us. They weren't like just Disney makeup artists, not to disparage anybody at Disney, because, man, if you can see what the people in the wig department and makeup department do on a daily basis, it's incredible. But they brought these guys in as outside contractors who all work on other things. One of the guys, I'm still really good friends with him. His name is RJ, and he is currently, and was at the time too, he's one of the makeup artists on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He specifically went and saw Captain Marvel just to see his name in the end credits, because he worked on Captain Marvel. And he would send me pictures of him spray painting the Kree blue and just going, I'm having flashbacks.
Wow, that's incredible. So it was very easy for you to go enjoy the parks out of makeup and have nobody coming up to you knowing who you were then.
Was it very easy? It was pretty easy. Most people don't know who I am out of makeup. But with social media and everything, people find
me. That's true.
This actually, just like I said, I was out there in February. I hosted that event in February, but the event was at night. And so I went to go play in the park during the day, and I took my daughter with me. We weren't even out of the Mickey and Friends parking lot when somebody yelled, Genie!
Really?
Yeah, turn around. Wow. And there was this woman, she was there with her two kids and her husband and their annual pass holders, and they recognized me because they follow me on Instagram.
Okay, yeah.
So we sit there, we talked, we took some pictures, we walked to the park together. We even ran into each other again later on in the day. They were great.
Well, it's one of those things like, so this, okay, so I've told this story on the show before, but this is kind of an interesting thing. So I feel like even if I saw you, now we've talked, right? And like, I follow you on Instagram. I've been following you since I found out who you were and where I could follow you. And I went back and looked at a lot of your old posts because you had a lot of stuff in there from the Aladdin time, from when you were working on Aladdin and since. Sure. And in fact, I think even far back, I know I'm crazy, but I think even far back, you had some pictures that you shared from when you worked in Aladdin's Oasis as well.
Yep. I think there are probably a few on there too. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I feel like if I thought I saw somebody famous, I would trick myself to say that's probably not them. And, you know, and that's how I was. So the story I had was we were in the park. My friend Beth and I were in the park, and this is 2002, 2003. We were walking down Main Street. She started slapping me. And I was like, what? And she was like really excited about something. And she said, come with me, come with me. And we went into the Carnation Cafe. Mm-hmm. And she said, look over there. It's Elijah Wood. I said, that's not Elijah Wood. She said, it's Elijah Wood. I said, no, it's not. So we patiently waited. He got his sandwich or whatever. And he came to the end of the thing. And I said, excuse me. And he stopped. And I said, my friend and I want to know, are you Elijah Wood? And he looked around. And then he looked back at me and he goes, I am. And I should have taken a picture with him, and everybody thinks I'm nuts for not taking a picture with him, but we had this stupid monkey we were taking pictures with, and I said, will you take a picture with our monkey? And he said, yes, and he threw his stuff down, he took a picture with the monkey. Of course, when I started telling the story when I got home from that trip, everybody's like, why didn't you get a picture with him? I'm like, I don't know. Because I was shocked that he was even there. I wasn't prepared for this. Yeah. And I didn't even think it was him when I went up to ask him. Anyway, it's just one of those weird.
You never know. It's all that Disney magic. You don't know what's real and what's not real.
That's true. That's true. Did you ever challenge yourself? I mean, you kind of said this, but other times, other than with Jafar, did you ever challenge yourself to try to make the cast break character and kind of laugh? Was that always kind of like something that you kind of aimed to do?
No, not always. There was that moment with Jafar because he pretty much challenged me to do it. And there were times where, you know, just like you feel like you can get somebody, and it's really tempting when, you know, when the shark smells blood in the water, you want to go for it.
Yeah.
And I'll admit, I went through a time too. It's just like, yeah, I want to get the cast, or I want to make them laugh. I want to make them break. But after a while, it was just like, if they break, they break, you know, let it happen organically. I'd rather tell a good joke. I'd rather serve the show and serve the story. So I never challenged myself to make them break. I would just challenge myself to tell a better joke. If they broke, they broke. But I just wanted to tell the best jokes or tell the best story that I could. And if it hit like that, fantastic.
Yeah, because I don't know. When I watch skits, right? So like earlier this afternoon, I was watching a little bit of SNL from this last week. And one of the things I find most humorous in those type of situations is when the cast does break and when they do start to laugh, because there's just something about that that's just oh goodness, like, you know, it just adds like a different level to it. And it's always fun to see comedians who are really good at kind of doing the straight face kind of thing, and actors, you know, lose it, and, you know, they show kind of that humanity to them that right. I don't know, I just find it always laugh more.
I enjoy it too. I mean, I love Stefan sketches when they would make Bill hit or break by giving him stuff to read on the cue cards that he didn't rehearse and things like that. I would love those. Those are some of my favorites. And I love doing it in the show, but I always found it was always better if it came organically than if I tried. Because then the other thing too, if you're trying to do it, the other actor can see that you're trying to do it, and then their guard goes up. It's a lot funnier and a lot more real, and the audience connects with it more when it just kind of hits them unexpectedly.
So what were some of the best parts about working that show, and what were maybe some of the worst parts about being the genie?
The cold glue for the makeup was one of the worst parts.
Was it hard to move your face with that many different pieces attached to your
really.
Face?
No, not really. It was very malleable. No, it wasn't that bad. The chin was kind of the bane of my existence because that would pop off a lot. But no, otherwise, I always said I did the show for free. They paid me to do the makeup and everything.
There you go.
Let's see, best parts of it. I mean, one, just getting to play at Disneyland. Are you kidding? One, the fact that you get to be there. And two, just, you know, all the
perks of being at Disneyland. For me specifically, the fact that I got to, you know, do a lot of my own jokes and play that way, and I got to sing and dance live and perform for an audience that way, and with a, like I said, with a family of people that I absolutely love. And, you know, I got to play with my friends every day.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound like it really felt like work to you.
There were some days when it did, you know, you can't laugh after a while, you know,
you'll
get into a rut or a routine or something where it's just like, oh my God, I need a break. Or if you're just not feeling well, whatever, there's some days where it's work, but ultimately when it comes down to it, you're getting paid to play. So play, just enjoy the fact that you get to play.
So what was your schedule like? Because obviously there was multiple shows per day. That would be a lot of time if you were the genie every single show, every single day. So did you have, you know, specific days off a week, or did that rotate, or how did you do that?
Contracts were renewed every year. As a full-time, I was the only genie who was full-time the whole time I was there. And full-time meant 4 days a week. And there were four shows in a day, and we'd split the day two and two. So on some days I'd be the first genie, some days I'd be the second genie. There was a time early on where early in the, like during the middle of the week, like I remember working a Wednesday was part of my schedule. And it was still four shows, but I was the only genie, so I'd do all four on that Wednesday. Or there'd be days where just like, you know, somebody was sick or somebody got hurt or whatever, and well, you did the first two, guess what? You're doing the last two also. It happens that you do all four. I mean, some of the people in the ensemble, that was their day. Most of them would get to do three shows and be swung out for one. But some of them would do four shows in a day. They do four shows a day way more than I would. And some of them are dancing and exerting themselves a lot more than I was. So, I mean, I'd complain, but I really wouldn't do it that much because I know some people had it so much harder than I did. So.
I'm just always amazed watching any of the performances, whether it's the parades or the live shows at a Disney park, and how these people are just, I mean, I would just be exhausted.
The parades.
They have a smile on their face, and they're just, I mean, they're working hard.
Yeah, they're just working hard.
They look awesome doing it. I just think
of the parades, especially like in Florida where it's humid and like 90. Yeah. And they're going through the whole parade route, and they have to look just as happy and chipper and dancing as they do when they step off as when they're done.
Yep.
So
kudos to them. I can do it.
It's a hard job. And I think a lot of people don't appreciate it as much as they should, I would say.
So I have a random question for you. So at the end of the show, the genie, you know, leaves. I think you usually went to Disneyland when you were free.
Yes.
And somebody would be riding the magic carpet. Did you ever get to ride the magic carpet?
I never once got to ride the magic carpet.
Aww. I don't know. I think I'd be a little afraid.
I'd be afraid.
To be perfectly honest, I had some trepidation about riding it. I wanted to ride it, but there's a part of me that was nervous about it. But also the opportunity for me to do it never really came up. I suppose I could have pursued it more and said, you know, strap me into the gantry and let me ride it around once. I'm sure they would have found a time to let me do it. But yeah, I never did it.
I guess I never thought about this, but the entire cast, because it's a, you know, it's a musical heavy kind of show. Mm-hmm. You guys all sung your own lines, like there was no lip syncing or anything?
No, it was all live.
That's pretty amazing, like having to do that all the time. I mean, that could be pretty, I mean, Broadway people do it too, but it's just at a Disney park, you don't think like, oh, wow. But I mean, it was Broadway caliber. Yeah, well, I mean, I watched the last show of Aladdin Musical Spectacular on YouTube, and then I found some clips of the Broadway show, and the Broadway show is different. For some reason, I wanted it to be the same, and it was different. they have some kind of, I mean, they have some genie moments, too, it seems like. I didn't get a full show, so I don't know the extent of it. But it did, I don't know. One of my favorite scenes in Aladdin Musical Spectacular is the Friend Like Me scene, because it feels very Vegas. Mm-hmm. And I saw the Friend Like Me scene that they did for, like, Good Morning America or something, and I was like, you know, I kind of like the California Adventure one better, because I love that Vegas-y quality to it. And, man, you moved around a lot in that one. I'll tell you
that. Yes. I'll tell you this. When I hired into the show, between rehearsals and then, you know, jumping in and doing 4 days a week of that show, in the first 6 months of that show, I lost about 20 pounds.
Who needs the South Beach diet?
Yeah,
right?
Just go work. The genie. Yeah, just go be the genie.
Just put on a fat pad and run up and down those stairs.
Yeah. So, which brings up another point, which I had here written down. So, how many at one time, like, you know, one time, let's say, at one time, how many genies were in the cast? And kind of a follow-up to that is, like, how big was the cast at any given time?
Wow. Well, let's see. If you're talking about, like, how many genies there were, like say, on the roster, I think the most there ever were at one time was 9.
Oh, wow.
Something like that? Well, because you needed to have enough genies to fill up, you know, all the shows for the week. That's 28 shows a week, if my math is right. 4 shows, it's 4 times 7. Yeah. And then you needed to have your subs and something happened. And a lot of times, too, I mean, I was the genie and that's all I did in the show. Some of the guys who played the genie, there was one guy in the show. He was like the everyman. Scott Arroyo played the genie, Jafar, the Sultan, the head guard, Iago. He pretty much every role that, you know, could have been had, I think he pretty much did. You need to have a few to be able to, you know, fill in all the spots.
That would be interesting to be a genie one day and then Jafar the next. That's a very big two opposite ends
you,
of the spectrum.
You have a stick out, so you have that.
Times where that happened in the same day.
Really?
Yep.
Well, what you do is you have some sick outs, right? So then you have Jafar going, Genie, I wish for you to make me the Sultan. And then he moves over. Poof, I make you the Sultan. And then he moves over.
You like that half face thing where he just turns one side.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
The person who played Iago, did they also have kind of a little bit of riffing ability like the Genie did?
Not the same way. They had like a little bit of like flexibility, but, you know, they never got to like make up their own jokes or anything like that.
So when they announced that they were not going to be continuing Aladdin, did the cast of Aladdin, did anybody have the option to then maybe transfer over to the Frozen show?
Several, it wasn't so much a transfer. They still had to audition. They made it open to us. They did a, I don't want to say a private audition. They did an in-house audition before they opened it up to people outside of Disney. They open it up to people within the park and especially from the cast of Aladdin themselves to audition for the show and see where they could find a fit. And there are still currently several people who were in the Aladdin show are in the Frozen show.
I feel like there's going to be some listeners that want to know this too. There was a member of the cast, and I thought she was amazing, by the way. She was just kind of like an ensemble character, but she was in a wheelchair. That was so awesome. Like,
oh, yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about her? Because I remember seeing her in the show quite a few times, and I remember thinking it was so cool that they had that she could be part of the cast mm-hmm. and like was just another yeah. person of the show, you know? And yep. That's such a cool opportunity.
It was a great opportunity. She was with the show, I think, from the beginning. Her name is Jennifer Kumiyama, and she is by far one of the nicest, sweetest people you would ever hope to meet. Yeah, she is fantastic. And she's in the show. She was in the show, not just, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, she's in a wheelchair. Let's have diversity. That girl can sing. Oh, man, does she have a voice. Yeah.
With anything live action like this, there are always oops moments where things don't exactly go as according yeah. to plan.
No, never. Oh, yeah.
Can you share with us a couple times where things didn't quite go to plan that people might find amusing or interesting?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, I know you can find a bunch of them. There's one that comes to mind, and I've seen this clip on YouTube, too, that happened to me, where it's in that scene with Genie and Jafar, where I'm granting him his wishes. The person on the soundboard jumped a cue and jumped a sound effect. Well, a lot of the mics were programmed into the board that, you know, so if, say, the sound designer would forget to bring a performer's microphone down when they weren't going to be speaking, they would automatically come down. It jumped a cue. So all of like Aladdin's lines and Jasmine's lines and everything seems like, you know, let us go. And, you know, what's going on? And, you know, we've got bigger problems than the palace guards. All those lines were just gone. You could hear them saying them, but they just weren't mic'd because the way it was programmed, those mics were out. The only mics left on were mine and Jafar's. And we had to do this whole, and there was still like interaction with these other characters where none of their mics were on. And so I had to run with it and get through it until we could get caught up to where we were. And then everything was, you know, back on track. Things like that would happen all the time. People would drop things. People would miss a cue. People would just randomly go up on a line and just forget where they were. One of my favorites, and I tell this story a lot because it's just one of the most amusing stories to me, of somebody forgetting a line. And I wasn't in the scene, and I don't mean to call the actor out or anything like that, but he just completely went up. Oh, and this just reminded me of another quick one too. So it was right after Friend Like Me, and that big old curtain comes down. So I am pretty much behind that curtain, changing into that big white outfit that I have for the Prince Ali number.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm bursting out. And in front of that, in front of the proscenium, is, you know, Jasmine confronting Jafar about, you know, him putting Aladdin in prison and all that sort of thing. Or you know, sentencing him to death because he was only trying to help. So Jafar's first line when he enters the stage is, "I'm sorry, princess, I know whatever you had about that street rat, but rules are rules." And then the scene goes on and Sultan comes out. Well, for some reason, that Jafar could only remember that first line. So every time he turned to Jasmine, he would just keep saying, "I'm sorry, princess." Well, can't you change the law? Can't the law be changed? Just trying to feed it to him. And he couldn't. It was killing him. And he's just like, to the point where he wasn't saying, "I'm sorry, princess," as Jafar. He was saying to the actress, "I'm so sorry. I can't. I'm sorry, princess." And I'm backstage thinking, he's having a stroke. Something's going on. Oh, God. Every line of his was, "I'm sorry, princess. I'm sorry, princess. I'm sorry, princess." And no matter how much they tried to feed him the line, he just couldn't get it. There was another time, there's the moment where Jafar and Iago in that window, you know, they realized, oh, that street rat must have found the lamp. He must have been trapped inside the Cave of Wonders. Well, we'll have to do a little trapping of our own. That little moment. For some reason, I don't remember what happened, but the Jafar missed that cue or couldn't, you know, get up to the window or whatever. So it was Iago out there. And the actor playing, you know, doing the puppet, realized Jafar wasn't there. It just went, "Oh, the street rat must have found the lamp. Wait till Jafar hears about this. Jafar, get up here. You're not going to believe it." And just basically kind of did the scene himself and just gave up and went away. And we can.
Thankfully, it sounds like all of these oopses minus the mic, they were kind of able to still, most of the audience may not have noticed that it didn't go exactly how it was supposed to go.
But I mean, we had such a great professional group that people just ran with it. And it was also to us like, look, you know, this is one show out of, you know, four today, many this week, and of the thousands that we're going to do it, move on.
Yeah. There's a famous line in show business. The show must go on. You just got to try to get through it.
Show must go on until it gets to the point where it's so broken you can't. And that happened too. We'd have technical difficulties that would stop the show. And if they could fix them, we'd pick up where we left off. Or sometimes there'd be a technical difficulty that would stop the show and we'd have to cancel.
Oh, no. Wow.
Was there something that was common that would break that would cause a cancellation?
Not always. The one that comes to mind the most, I think, that caused the most problems was the onstage carpet. And I don't mean, you know, the actress. The one that Aladdin and Jasmine, they're singing Whole New World, and it's kind of like cruising them around the, you know, the foggy stage and whatever. Because that's a whole big mechanical arm piece that comes up from beneath the stage and everything like that. And sometimes, you know, it wouldn't work properly, or the little opening wouldn't close all the way, so there'd be this big hole in the stage. And the stage is covered with fog, so, you know, you can't send dancers out. So from my recollection, that would be the one thing that would stop the show the most. It didn't happen all that often, but when it did, that would pretty much be the one that would do it.
I have to imagine, it must be a surreal experience, because I'm sure you saw the animated movie Aladdin before you worked on it.
Of course.
And then, you know, not knowing when you first saw it that, like, one day I'm going to be part of this show and be such an iconic part of the show. I mean, that must be a surreal experience.
It is, to think that that's, you know, part of my life and that I actually kind of have that, you know, spot in Disney history. Because I remember when the movie came out, I loved it so much. I went and saw it again, like, the following week. I took my mom to go see it. I'm like, you have to see this movie. I got the soundtrack. I would sing along. I would think just like, how much fun would it have been to have done this? And then to get the opportunity to actually do it, I mean, literally a dream come true.
Aladdin, the musical spectacular, is done, unfortunately. If people were interested in seeing you now, where can people kind of follow you? Where can people see you work your craft?
Well, they can always find me on Instagram. I'm more active on Instagram than I am on Facebook. So I'm on Instagram at it's Dylan White, I-T-S, Dylan White, D-Y-L-A-N-W-H-I-T-E. So you can always follow me on Instagram. So I'm, like I said, I'm more active there than anywhere else. And of course, on my website, dylanwhite.com. I'm working on getting more into the Dallas comedy scene out here. I was just in California at the end of March and played a comedy club out there. So I'm hoping to be able to do a lot more of that. So
even though you do still technically, Kurt, you know, you do still work for Disney, you are still a cast member. If you were to go back and work at the park, is there something, what would your dream job be at the park, or are you doing it now?
I think my dream job at the park, I mean, if I couldn't be performing at the park anymore, I would want to be more on the behind the scenes creative end of things, you know, helping develop shows or write shows or something like that.
That's definitely one we haven't had yet. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dylan, for making the time to talk to us about your iconic role in the parks. And
my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Learned a lot of cool things, and hopefully our listeners also enjoy it. So, well, have a great evening.
You too. Thanks so much.
Well, we did get a piece of feedback again this week, and I wanted to just make sure that this person heard that we have read their thing, and I want them to kind of get in contact with us, because there's unfortunately we're not able to communicate back to you through iTunes reviews. So Austin wrote in again and said, I was just telling you that I like the history of Disneyland, unlike every other 11-year-old boy. I just have you and my mom and dad to talk about Disney. Anyways, love the podcast. Keep up the great work. So Austin, if when you listen to this episode, find out from your parents if it's okay. Shoot us an email, feedback@dlweekly.net, so we can actually kind of talk with you a little bit, because we'd love to talk Disneyland with you. And if there's any other kids out there that doesn't have anybody else to talk to about Disney, shoot us an email. We can, we'd be more than happy to chat with you guys about it. So, well, if you want a way to chat with us and other listeners of the show about anything Disney Parks related, well, you can head over to dlweekly.net/forum to be taken to our forums. The forums are free and open to everyone to chat about Disney Parks all around the world. So head on over and make a quick post about yourself in the introductions forum and join in on the discussion.
If you want to have a voice in the podcast and in our discussion topics, please head over to dlweekly.net/vote to register your choice for the next discussion topics. We've been getting a lot of great responses, so please keep up the great suggestions for the future of the show. Also, when you're on our website, we do have a listener survey that we would love for you guys to fill out too, so you can let us know how we're doing. Maybe if you have any thoughts or suggestions, or if you like everything how it is, we'd like to hear what you guys think of the show.
Yep, and you can get to that at dlweekly.net/survey. And so we're going to be pushing this for the next little while. We like to get some good feedback that way. So it helps us make sure that we're doing doing the show right and providing you with what you guys are looking for from the show. So,
well, now it's time to return to James over in Trivia Land to get this week's answers for the trivia.
How do you feel like we did, Teresa?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. All right, James.
I'm just telling you, I'm not going to be lifting your spirits, but perhaps they could stay in the Haunted Mansion, where there is something that stands, where the Hatbox Ghost was supposed to stand. What is there for our first trivia question this week?
I didn't give you a thing. I said across from the bride, so I think I'm wrong already.
I'm saying a hat.
It's a harpsichord.
It's almost a hat.
The harpsichord is across from the bride.
He asked for an item.
Yeah, you were so close.
Well, we both got a zero on that.
We're going to discuss this a little bit. I don't think that was... I think it was the right move to put him where he is now.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, that's the best spot.
He would not have had the best... Just think of the lighting in the attic scene versus the little kind of... transition area.
There was nothing there before, so it's a great place for him.
Well, and he looks better there. Yeah. I think it's a little almost bright feeling in the attic, and the attic's all about the bride.
Yeah.
So I don't think he would have made as much sense there either. I think he would have gotten ignored. Poor Hattie.
And what a great play for the cult following that he has, too. Uh-huh.
That's true.
That prime space.
Exactly.
All right, our second question, which came from Dylan H., is on the Monsters, Inc., Mike and Sully to the Rescue ride, there's a sign in the locker room saying how many days there have been without an accident. How many days has it been since the last accident?
I said 5.
I said 13.
You're way too low. It's been 47 days since an accident.
Who was there that long?
Apparently so.
Or maybe this is before Boo showed up. Like 47 days before Boo showed up. Or before the sock incident.
I think Boo's with him in that scene.
I don't know.
I think she had just shown up, so I think that's the deal. So,
well, if you know the correct answer, email us.
The sock was definitely an accident.
I know, but maybe they weren't. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that didn't count on that. Now, this is what I'm doing tonight. I'm going home and watching this.
There you go.
Figure out the timeline of how these events all came to be.
Wow, Teresa, you have such a rough job to investigate the answer to this question. You've got to watch Monsters, Inc. Man, I feel so sorry for you.
Life's tough.
You know, someone has to take it for the team sometimes. And I will happily do that.
All right.
So expect my text around like 2 a.m.
Oh, God.
No, I'm just kidding.
We'll see that in the morning when we wake up. Our third question, which came from Daniel, is which attraction in the park did Walt and his wife celebrate their 30th wedding anniversary prior to the park opening?
And we both said
Mark Twain.
The Mark Twain.
And you're both right.
Woo-hoo! We got a point.
Take story spot on. All right, our fourth question, our new attempt at a question of getting lost in the park. So I guess Galaxy's Edge isn't open yet, so I turn around and head south, passing Big Thunder on my left. I continue south along the river, but turn left instead of following the river bend. I continue forward in Adventureland, as the hint was given, and take my first left. I follow the path until my stomach tells me it's time to stop.
What? Pause. When were we told Adventureland?
He said Adventureland.
Tig asked for clarity.
I asked for clarity. I said, are you in Frontierland or Adventureland? He said Adventureland.
Oh, I did not hear that.
Yeah.
Tig asked for a lot of clues on this one, so.
Well, I was trying to clarify.
I totally did not hear that.
And I trust you to be our navigator when we're driving places.
Yeah, thank goodness I don't have to explain walking paths.
Very lots of trust because he's got to pull the map up and verify it.
So I said Bengal barbecue.
Well, that my.
Well, you want to redo your answer then?
No, that's not the fun in this. I was answering with what the question was presented, with no extra material.
And what
needed.
Did you say?
I said the Royal Street Veranda, the place that we couldn't always remember the name to.
Sure.
With the wonderful bread bowls.
When you said it, I thought I was like, oh yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I got a little further along than you're both giving credit, and a little turned around. I actually ended up at Rancho del Zocalo.
How is that an Adventureland?
It's not. I took my first left, which is the only path out of Adventureland.
And then you would have had to continue left because you'd have to go past the shooting arcade to get to Rancho Zocalo.
He said he continued on the path till he hit the first eatery.
We got to get good at this somehow, right?
It's going to be challenging.
See, I think that's the fun of this.
Okay.
See, I think people don't understand. When we go to the park together, I just follow you because you run around no matter what anyway. I mean, you should have seen me trying to play the Disneyland Adventure game on the Xbox. I got way lost trying to find the Haunted Mansion.
Well, part of it was because it's with the Kinect, so we're like, you have to like wave your hands around to move. It's very weird.
It did not go well.
No. What's our bonus question? All maybe right. Maybe there's hope to get 2 points this time.
In honor of the debut of the Mouse Kingdoms podcast recently, as of February 2019 article I found, how many Disney World resort rooms are there?
I said 20,000.
And I said 17,000.
And you both undershot it. There's 30,843 rooms.
Wow.
And that's crazy. And you can bet they're going to be sold out this fall when Galaxy's Edge opens down there. Right? Well, I don't know how much help I actually need stumping these two, but your questions are way more fun than mine. So if you've got a trivia question you want me to ask TNT, you can send me an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
Daniel, thank you for giving us a question that we could answer. And thank you, Dylan, for giving Teresa an excuse to go watch Monsters, Inc.
Yes, thank you, guys. Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.